Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C Squared. Then I jumped on the bandwagon. I'm your host, Aaliyah, and this is Heavy Business, a podcast where we talk to music industry professionals and musicians and learn together about the music industry, marketing, and other tools that can help you promote the music you put so much effort into creating. Today's podcast is brought to you by the band Splintered Throne. Decibel Magazine says their latest album, The Greater Good of Man, quote, bridges the worlds of thrash, prog, and power metal, unquote. With blazing dual guitars paying homage to Maiden and Priest, a unified and pounding rhythm section, and new vocalist Lisa Mann bringing a powerful melodicism reminiscent of Ronnie James Dio, The Greater Good of Man will bring you back to the day of classic metal. Take your seat now upon the Splintered Throne on Bandcamp and on your favorite streaming platform. Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we are here with Wolfgang Roth, of the CEO of CMM Marketing. Wolfgang, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Before we dive in, could you please give us and our listeners a brief summary of who you are and what you do in the realms of heavy music?
Well, because I'm a dinosaur and I'm in that business so long, it could take very long, but I try to make it short.
Make a brief summary, sort of, yeah.
Well, after I studied, and I was some kind of it might be different in several countries, but civil servant. That's how I started. So I was working for the city council after the university and stuff like that. And then I decided, and I was playing music, did a little show stuff, working as a technician, and I did sound and light. And this is 100 years ago. So when I be at the show today and I see a front desk and say, wow, I have to go to university for that now. But at the time, you had like a Soundcraft 16 channel or 24 and things like that. So anyway, then because I was involved with guys, the early Scorpions, and then there's a big German band called Eloy, and they said, hey, Wolfgang, we're building a studio and we want somebody to manage us. And, you know, it's like the germ in that job I was, it's just a lifetime job. So it's the safest thing. You work for the government. So I talked to my parents and friends, and they all said, are you out of your mind? How can you really change that? And I said, well, I'm not really happy in that structure. And so I did it. And then the roller coaster started. So we had the studio, we did touring and management, and we were touring like Eric Burden, John Mayall, this kind of stuff. And then we even did Eruption, which was in the 80s, was a disco band, One Way Ticket. You probably remember that. But anyway, so that was a big learning phase of everything. And then I got somebody asked me to do pre-production for a Joe Cocker tour. And I did that. And then the band wanted me to be their tour manager, which I did for like 3, 4, 5 years. And I learned a lot on that. I had all of a sudden you're in a bigger level. You meet record companies. You meet all the touring people, etc. And then we continued doing tours. But then... it was a bad time, so we went down, and I have to say, okay, you've got to do something else or something different. And what I recognized in all that time, and we're talking about mid-80s, early 90s, like the independent promotion was not a real thing there. So record companies had their promotion departments, but they were only focusing on the period when the product come and then forget about it. So we started, or I started with two people and said, okay, let's do that. And because my connections was Cochrane to EMI at the time. And I said, Wolfgang, we have a young band here, a newcomer. Would you like to do something like managing and PR, et cetera? So we started, and we sold over 100,000 units for a newcomer band. And that was like a heavy rock band. So then they go, oh, that worked. So we have another band. Would you like to do this and that and that? So it continues and coming from the more rock area. And when I played music, we did stuff like, and we're talking about the 70s at the time, yeah, just Rattel, early Genesis, this type. So I always liked metal, but we moved on to that. So, and I try to speed it up like this, get in like 30 years or more in a short period. So
it's good.
We did loads of metal acts. So then I got this stamp on my forehead, metal. And then we were working for a company, Castle, at the time, and we did a load of promotional work for them. So then there we did Halloween and whatever. And there I met Rod Smallwood. And we did Halloween, and then he said, well, we need somebody working for Bruce Dickinson's solo stuff. And then here in Hanover, we're based, there's a record company called SPV. So we started working for that, and we had a contract where we did like almost everything they did in that time with Steamhammer. And which means Motorhead, Whitesnake, even one Priest album, Molly Hatchet, whatever.
Big
I can't
names,
even remember everything. So, but that was a continuous flow. And which means we had to build up a team. There was changes in the team. He said it was like ups and downs. So we stopped touring business and concentrated on that. But as you know, it's like when that was the high times of CD sales. So the money was in the record companies. But I always felt you got to work more closer with the bands. And that's what we always did. So we had to, due to the connection with Rod Smallwood, we did the, as I said, the Bruce Dickinson early stuff. And then when the first Maiden reunion thing came, and they say, hey, we're doing a new album, you want to get involved? So we started with Maiden's Brave New World and continued until today. Meanwhile, every album is gold. And at least after the second album, everything was always number one. So that was a big thing for us as well. So, but then like record companies shorted their budgets, et cetera, et cetera. So the whole thing moved a little bit. And I always thought like for small bands, there was no room. Either they're lucky they get a deal, but if that doesn't work with the first or second album, they got kicked out and they were gone. And on the technical side, when I made music, you had to go in a studio and spend at least $50,000-$60,000 or Deutschmarks at the time. And so there was a natural filter. Then with the new techniques, you can do an album with your laptop, good microphone. So that cost came down. So that was a big chance for young bands, at least in the production area. But then, they got stuck because they had to find a partner. So when I came up with the idea on two reasons, first, I wanted to help them. Second, I want to have a second flow of income.
Smart.
And I'm straight and honest on that. So then we started. We did the first thing. There was a German band called Kripper.
Oh, I know them. Yeah, we've had Britta on the podcast.
Yeah, right. So, and when they came to us, they played, when they had 20 people, and when they got a fee that maybe 100, 150 euros. And then so we continued working with them, which means They got bigger fees. They got sales. They had gigs. I brought them through our connection. I brought them on 70,000 tons. And so that helped, et cetera. And then more bands came. So that was when SOL started. And meanwhile, it's not only small bands, it's like even bigger mid-class bands. They say, why do we need a record company? Because we have a deal with a big digital distributor. We have a deal with a Europe-wide physical distributor. Even that's difficult because sales are just down. So in the beginning, it was maybe 10% digital and 90% physical. Now it's right the opposite. And so that's where we are. And meanwhile, we're still working with Maiden. We're still working with several other things. And then in, meanwhile, 12, 13 years ago, when Andy Piller from 70,000 Tons, he's a very old friend of mine from touring times. And he called me and said, Wolfgang, we had this crazy idea. And I'm investigating stuff and checking things since more than a year already. Why don't you think about the idea and can you do the marketing and PR in Europe? And that was 2009 or 10. I can't really remember. So we started, and I remember it's like talking to bands, and they say, now we don't gonna a cruise ship. This is something for my grandparents or my parents, maybe. And then they say, we really got tied up on that boat. We can't escape. With at the time, the ship had like 2,000 something of visitors. And there's no, the concept is no backstage beside the technical backstage around the stages. So you go in a restaurant, you see the Nightwish or the Testament people next to you or in the breakfast room. And so many bands in the beginning were really scared. And then we convinced them, and I remember two, three, four bands. I went to like three, four shows continuously talking and come on, try. And then 2011, it was the case. We started from Miami with the Majesty. And Andy, as crazy as he had this idea, we cover the pool, we put a pool deck stage, which no other cruises do. And that was the first heavy metal cruise. There was nothing, there were music cruises, where normal cruise with some bands playing, but we made a festival on a cruise ship, not a cruise with music. And that is continuing. It's still when, I think this year after the pandemic, Andy really reached the point where physically you can't build a bigger stage as we had. And so I was lucky. I had like German TV. We even went on the government TV daily news, and we had several things. So, and then we were sold out year after year. And the other good thing was because it started to become a community, a real community. So we had people in the beginning, we had like 43, 45 countries. Now, I think before the pandemic, we had 74. And we're talking about Fiji Islands, Uzbekistan, Hawaii,
everybody.
Germany, Switzerland, all over the place, even places I had to look on the map, where is that? And it really continued that all the, we call them survivors, they become a family. So before we go on that cruise, there's a pre-cruise event, which is organized by the survivors themselves. We don't go there. They meet at Miami Beach the day before we start. Then you see on the forum somebody, for example, a Mexican guy, come, I'm going to Munich. Are there any survivors who could give me tips? They meet up. We have stuff on several festivals. And the moment Andy is in Bogota, at the Monsters of Rock, or it was. And we were in Canada, in heavy Montreal, with an own area, and we were in Hellfest, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a real big thing where I'm there with a whole team. We do the whole press, the worldwide stuff. We do everything before and after. That's a big chunk, which normally, without the pandemic, it was continuing year by year. Well, I hope in, well, it's end of January next year, it's the next time, so we're all looking forward to that. And now we all, well, we're now here, so that try to crunch the history in a very short period.
Oh, that was great. You're doing my job for me. I don't even have to ask questions. But that was a great summary of like a lot of the topics I want to go over in a little more detail. So when you started CMM, was that when you had that idea that you wanted to be that middleman for the smaller artists, or was it before that?
Well, to be honest, I wanted to be in the music business. That's how it started. And it was always interesting to have like the big guys and the small guys, because I know it's like to become big, you got to start small. And if there's nobody who's going to help the people, it's not going to happen until you're really lucky. And that was the point.
Gotcha. So, like you said, you've been in it for a while. What is the role of PR in the modern music industry, and how has it changed over recent years?
I think when we started, it was like very hard driven by the record companies. They had their ideas, and yeah, you got to follow the rules. Even you had space to do it your way. And there was budgets. Sometimes it was totally crazy. So money was, at least with the bigger bands, it was never an issue. We were flying people to LA from Europe. We were flying people to wherever, great hotels, et cetera, et cetera. And even for the bands, and I always said it that way, it's like in the beginning, band did records to be able to tour, talking about 60s and 70s. Then when the CDs came, they toured to sell CDs. Now we're back on the other thing, that the band do new products to go on tour and make the money, because that's the only way to make money in the moment, unless you are really a heavy seller. And that goes with the whole planning of record companies, because even a number one doesn't mean you're a top seller. You can, well, at least what I know here from in Germany and in other countries, in a lucky week with no big competition, you get a number one and you haven't even sold 5 or 10,000 units. So that shows a lot.
Yeah.
And so in the past, touring was, well, a record company wasn't interested in touring to sell records. But if the tour was very successful, the only reason they pushed it was because if it's very successful, the artist is more successful and you sell more records. Now it's the total other way. The bands want to sell out or want to have a big audience because this is where they make money. And I know we had bands where we're talking about several setups and like in a combination between touring and a record, and they postponed everything because it just didn't work. And the budgets from the record companies are not as big. So, and then the whole technical areas in up to the 90s and even the early 2000s, print was the print and radio was the most important stuff. So which means you could concentrate on a like 8 weeks prior to the release and maybe a little bit afterwards. That was the promo part. Today, you have to be there all the time. You have to be online. You have to do posts. You have to be on Instagram, on Twitch, on YouTube, on whatever. And always new channels pop up. And many people believe, okay, and the easier way is you can really read numbers. Say, okay, they have whatever, 50,000 followers, and the other ones have 30 or 100 or millions, which makes a load of people believe that the online is the only measure for success. And I still see all these numbers as tools, and they are important. But it's, well, seeing a band live is an experience you can't put on a screen.
100%, yeah. They tried during the pandemic, but yeah, it's not the same. Now,
that was the only possibility to do things, but it's getting this vibe and this energy from stage is, there's nothing which what can replace it. So you can't only go for, you need 200,000 followers or streams or whatever. I always see it, it's an important tool, but success in music business is like a Lego building where you put stone by stone so and build something up. And especially in metal and rock, because it's much more personal than loads of techno and other pop music.
Other genres, yeah.
Yeah, and you can see that as well as like the vibe on festivals like Wacken or the Cruise or whatever. It's much more peaceful than any techno stuff because people drink beer and maybe drink other alcohol, but it's it was like a really focus when we started the Cruise. Because everybody say, oh, they're going to demolish the ship and it will be horrible. And nothing happened.
Of course, yeah.
There was no issue. People were helping each other. Even it's, and we have like people from all different, how can I say that? Like you got rich people who just, they rent like the owner suite for thousands. And there's other people who save in the whole year to be with friends in a four-bed cabin, but they're all equal on the boat. And that is what the whole vibe is. And I think this is the most important thing in rock and metal. And that's reflects as well on the PR, coming back to that point. It's like I always said, there's no excitement without emotion. And to keep the emotion going is not easy to do. When we talk later on copywriting, that's right. A very important part.
Well, we can talk about that now if you want.
Yeah, because I think when we started in my team, I have really good writers, and we really look. When we get new people and with that all that fits. And we very often I have these discussions where I say, well, you can just write something. Or sometimes when we get any infos from record companies where some product manager just types something and then you read it and say, okay. Or you can write a real good text which gets you somewhere. But that takes time.
True.
Because we have to like write it and then you go over it and you correct it and you got to talk to the artist and things to get that going. But by now, I think many people realize how important that is. And that's one of the reasons we're doing okay. Plus, the fact is, when since we and that was a pandemic thing when we started working for EMP. EMP is one of the biggest mail orders in Europe.
Yes. Yeah.
And we started because they were looking for somebody helping them in press and writing and stuff. And we started small. And meanwhile, we writing a lot of stuff for them. And there are meetings. There is like you have to get the information before you write. And on the other hand, for us, it's seeing the other thing, talking about trading stuff or their control systems, and as well as like when they buy T-shirts in Pakistan, that there's really somebody down there looking how they produced. I never believed that before until I spoke to the lady and all that. So we learned a lot, and then being creative in ideas. So it's like 2-3 years ago, well, before the pandemic, we worked for Kissing Dynamite, which is a German.
I'm familiar, yeah.
Yeah, and we had the idea and thinking, okay, beside all the normal stuff, what else can we do? And I met on the cruise a big, I don't even know the English word, like a big meat company. They do sausages and stuff like that.
Okay.
And we were sitting in the evening and said, well, we should do something, because he was a metal fan or a rock fan. And I said, well, we got this new thing coming up. And I said, wow, when you think about it, they produce a rock sausage and a whiskey sausage.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I said, wow, you got on one side of like this 5 sausage packages, you got all the QR code and all information about the product. But what is on the other side? There was nothing. I said, oh. So we use the other side, put a QR code in, which leads you to a website where you can listen to the music, when you can be part of a raffle where you win like whatever 5 cases of beer and a grill and several sausages for a grill evening or a barbecue evening.
Nice.
And we had to do that very fast because it's like the album release was in whatever 8 weeks. So to set everything up. But in the end, we were in like 3,500 shops all over Germany.
Crazy.
And that's it's
so this
it's,
was paired with an album release.
Yeah.
Huh. That's
and crazy. This kind of ideas, it's you have to be crazy.
Yes. But it's very creative. It's a cool idea.
Yeah, and you have to have a great team and know people from all different angles to pick up or combine ideas. Sometimes you talk to somebody who says, well, and you talk about something. And like a couple of days or weeks later, you talk to somebody else on another totally different issue. And I said, well, if we put these things together and this, you got a new idea. That's the way we work.
I have to ask, how did the band react to being on a sausage package? Like, what was their first thoughts on that?
Well, they looked at me and said, are you crazy? The good thing was, there was no vegetarians or vegans on it.
Well, that wouldn't work very well. I would
don't get me wrong. I don't have any. My son is a vegan. I don't have anything. But a sausage is not a vegan product.
Right.
And we tried to a different kind, but in the same way campaign with the band. And the band said, well, we won't. Because we got 2 vegans, it won't work. So we couldn't do it. But
yeah, that makes sense. It's got to fit the band.
Kiss and Dynamite is like, it's a classical rock music festival barbecue. So it fit perfectly.
It's a great idea. I just was like, I can't believe someone thought of that. That's amazing.
Well, if you see, I sent when the presentation, there's a picture of the package. And they did a barbecue. And we filmed it and we did little videos and all that kind of stuff with it. So, and I could continue. It's like sometimes you, some one thing leads to another. It's like you work with one band, so you meet people from the TV, the people you know for a long time. You could use that for something else. Or meanwhile, because we do in whole of Europe for the cruise and for other things, now we do, beside UK and Ireland, we do Maiden in cooperation with their British press guy, because we have experience. It's like Finland, Sweden, France, Spain, whatever. And we know all the people. We did as well. Going back in history, one thing I forgot, I worked for Wacken quite a while ago, and Wacken had 15,000 people. And yeah, we did the PR until they had like 40, 50. And then they said, well, the contract ended and they have their own people. We're still friends, so, but that was another experience. And then we did Metal Days in Slovenia, one of the beautiful festival sites I've ever been. I don't know if you saw pictures from that.
Yeah, that's one I really want to go to.
Yeah, and so, and there where you meet all press people from all over the world or Europe or wherever. So that builds up relationships, which makes it a little bit easier to achieve something. So
we are running short on time, unfortunately, but I do want to ask one more question. If we could go into branding in regards to bands, obviously for products and stuff, maybe it's a little different, but what are some of the weaknesses that you see in general with smaller independent bands when it comes to branding?
I think to make a band successful, you need to make the band a brand,
right?
And that's therefore you need to have some ideas to make them outstanding, where people recognize, and it could be all different things, great live show, whatever, crazy dresses, name it.
Yeah,
there's no limit, but you have to be careful as well. Some bands overdrive it, and then it looks just crazy, and say, okay, are they out of their mind, or you don't take them serious. I think it's an important part, but it's what we learned is you still meet bands. They say, well, now we have a record or some kind of contract. We can lean back and somebody's working for us. This is not going to happen. Even the big bands still have to do stuff there. And talking about history, and because I'm friends with several, meanwhile, very old stars, and I know their stories. I remember it's like the Dire Straits were in their very early years. They had no money for hotels. They were sleeping in a truck in the winter. So they woke up with like little ice on the nose. Or Maiden, they played pub by pub. And they really did it the hard way. And I won't name anybody, but we had bands who said, well, we touring and double rooms or use hostels or something like that, or the club has some rooms where you can sleep. This is not what we want to say. Well, okay, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the industry.
Unless daddy puts loads of money in. We have this part we have as well, where it's like where bands come, where money isn't an issue. But I say you can't buy success for a long run. You can maybe do a little blimp by spending enormous money, but it won't last.
Yep.
So
Well, to wrap things up, I think, Curtis, do you have any follow-ups that you wanted to?
Not that's going to not take us the next hour, so I'm
all
good.
Right. Yeah,
have to have you back at some point.
Yeah, if you're willing. I did want to go in depth about a few other topics, but there's so much wisdom that you have to offer.
Lots.
And we got to learn a lot about 70K, which was, I did not plan on learning so much about it. So that was very cool.
Well, I can send you lists of video links, because the videos, or just go on 70,000tons.com or .tv with you, because we always have like recaps, day zero, day one, two, three. There's after movies. There is even loads of private filmings.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I can't, even I talk much, but I can't talk as much as you can see on the
picture's worth a thousand words, a video's worth a million.
Yeah. And it's just like when we were briefing like the video guys, and it's like we have the last couple of years we had a French crew, they doing the after movie, and I met them first time when we did Metal Days. And we're with them, very small, but they're crazy ideas. There's two guys. And so I said, I don't need for an after movie. I don't need like 3 minutes of band. I want atmosphere. And that was counts as well as like for photographers, when we do photographs briefing. It's okay, two shots from the band on stage, right? Oh, but band shots you find everywhere. But you should use this great environment. And you have to experience by yourself, because everything else is, as I said, you can't put emotion on a screen, or not as the reality.
Not fully,
is.
Yeah, not fully.
Yeah, so.
Well, closing things off with a great additional piece of wisdom there. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Wolfgang. Everyone listening, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by following or subscribing to us, recommending it to your friends, or leaving us a review on your platform of choice. Thank you for listening to Heavy Business, brought to you by C-Squared Music.